We can tie a couple of things together here from today. We have talked about Juwan Mitchell, the Texas linebacker. He led Texas in tackles last year. He started 15 games the last 2 years. Apparently, there is mutual interest between he and K-State. Mitchell being pretty tight-lipped about where exactly his options are, other than Tennessee being one of the others. I don't know how confident I am in that being a legitimately realistic option, but I love that K-State is taking that chance, and I would absolutely welcome the hell out of him coming in here, even if he has been basically a job jumper before. Committed to one place, didn't go, signed another place, didn't go, wound up at Texas, tried to leave last year, decided to go back. Now he's leaving this year. Total job jumper. That resume is just filled with a new job every 6 months. But you'll take him to play linebacker here because I don't feel great about what K-State has at linebacker for 2021. However, having said all of that, continuing my crusade to steal Derek Young's ideas in his piece that had the most important player on offense, defense, and special teams heading out of the spring, I disagreed with him on the offensive side of the ball. I agree with him on the defensive side of the ball. And the stipulation here, we're not going with the total obvious heavy hitters. On offense, that means no Skylar Thompson, no Deuce Vaughn, because that would just render the conversation pretty meaningless and not very fun if you're going to say, well, yes, Skylar Thompson would be number one on my list of guys that you would not want to lose, most important to the defense or to the offense. Defensive side of the ball, like, it's a little bit different. I mean, I think, like, I don't know, Jerron McPherson is maybe like the one guy that you say probably doesn't count here because he's been around for a long time and is somebody that's really valuable back there. Julius Brents almost has gotten to that point, even though he's not played a down of football for K-State. He's been so hyped that I'm tempted to put him on the not applicable list. But I'm buying Derek's answer here. To me, it's T.J. Smith. It's T.J. Smith. Injured last year, played some safety, played some nickel. It's all about what K-State has at defensive back, specifically nickel right now, which is not much. In the spring, they're playing Wayne Jones, converted safety, now linebacker, and Ryan Hennington, converted quarterback to safety to linebacker at nickel. Like, those guys were playing nickel because there were not other options. And if you listen to Chris Klieman talk about the nickelbacks, it does not seem all that encouraging right now based on where they're at.
We were down Ross Elder, who missed the spring. We were down Hunter Henry, who missed the spring. We were down Amaris Brown, who missed the spring. We were down T.J. Smith, that missed the spring. So there's four guys that fit somewhere, whether they're nickels, strong safeties, free safeties, but they missed the spring. So we have to those guys have to do a great job of getting together when it's captain's practices and some of those other things and getting their bodies ready to go because they miss so many repetitions. But all four of those guys we see somewhere in the mix in the fall.
Okay, and that's all well and good, but I don't think Ross Elder is going to be your starting nickel. I doubt that Hunter Henry is going to be your starting nickel. You need legitimate bona fide scholarship players. Like the nickel isn't important. I think most people are starting to come around to realizing just how important that spot actually is in football in 2021 when you're dealing with spread offenses. But it still is a bit of a slow, gradual increase there. But hell, if you look back in K-State history, I mean, David Garrett, rest in peace, was a tremendous nickel player. Great for K-State's defense. Randall Evans made it to the NFL being K-State's nickel. And this is still like fairly early Snyder 2.0. You need a good, strong nickel. And T.J. Smith was blowing dudes up. He has the athleticism, pretty good recruiting pedigree relative to K-State's roster. That's somebody that you need to come back healthy and ready to roll. So I would list him number one, just based on what we know about positions of need. And do they need somebody to step up and be a dude on the defensive line? They do. Do I worry about them having a bona fide number one linebacker, like somebody that can legitimately strike fear into another defense? Absolutely, I do. Daniel Green would be my number two if we're talking about most important for the defense. But right now, there's basically nobody. I mean, it's a blank space. Call him Taylor Swift. It's a blank space at nickelback right now. So T.J. Smith has to be that dude. By necessity, he to me becomes most important right now.
I see it as necessity as well when picking out like who would be my most important pick, because if you didn't rule out Jerron McPherson as being the obvious choice, I would go unpredictable again. And absolutely Jerron McPherson, he's my favorite player on defense. I think he's one of the most solid tacklers. He's so downhill, it kind of reminds me of Arthur Brown, the way he can get downhill and just smother a guy. It's awesome to watch Jerron McPherson play. I think I kind of, with this selection, though, and I'm still having a tough time even just picking one guy, I do tend to gravitate towards the secondary, because, I mean, K-State's secondary, or the pass defense for K-State was last in the Big 12. That's obviously not acceptable. So when it comes to necessity, obviously somebody has to step up and get this area of the game for K-State under control. It's really hard for me to pick somebody with the secondary. I almost just want to pick him as a whole. I mean, I would throw out Echo Boydeau. I think he's pretty important, but I'm just kind of throwing guys out there. It's hard for me to pick just one. Honestly, if I had to pick somebody, Julius Brents. Julius Brents coming in out of Iowa, an established guy as a defender, is going to come in with that Iowa experience, that blue collar Iowa defensive experience. I think he's a guy that could come in and jumpstart the defense when it comes to defending the pass. I really do.
Well, it's fair to pick basically anybody out of the secondary, because with Brents, you can say, look, he's already been anointed as this bona fide number one corner. If he's not that, and if you were to take him away, like if he were to get hurt or something, the defense completely changes. And it does, but a lot of that is because of just a lack of depth. They don't have very much depth there. So that could be said about basically anybody. Brents would make my top three. I'd go T.J. Smith, Daniel Green, Julius Brents, if we're going to count Brents in this list. And I think a part of that subconsciously is because he's, as dumb as this sounds, he's almost fit into that Deuce Vaughn category, where it's like, well, we feel like we know what to expect from him, that he'll be great, and so let's focus on the question marks. But at corner, they have Echo Boydeau and they have Justin Gardner. And I watched K-State go down to Norman, Oklahoma and beat the eventual Big 12 champions with those two guys starting at corner. So, like, I have seen that happen. I think it helps a lot to have Brents, but I have seen them do it with those other two guys. I don't know who they would have playing nickel in that scenario right now. I'm viewing this as like if you were to take one of those guys off the defense. If you take T.J. Smith away, if he's not healthy, he's not recovered, he's not back. Ooh. Ooh, boy. Now, the transfer portal, and keep in mind, we just brought up Juwan Mitchell, the Texas linebacker, and that being a possibility. I'm sure they'll continue to scour the portal for a defensive back, which it sounds like they very much want and need. But that's a crapshoot. Like, relying on that and saying, hey, I'm going to go somewhere else on the defense because they are going to work the portal and surely they'll bring somebody in here. Like, okay, but it's a crapshoot. I think it's a part of the game you need to embrace, and they feel like they've done very well with the guys that they have right now. But even then, it's not like all of those guys are starters. I mean, Eric Munoz, I don't think is going to be a starter. He was a nice depth piece, or has the potential to be a decent depth piece. But that may be all that you're able to wind up grabbing at nickel. And like T.J. Smith is somebody that they at least felt comfortable enough last year putting out there. I believe in his talent and where he was going. So I don't want to leave it up to that. I just can't leave it up to that. And the kicker here, because I come down to a point where I'm like, all right, is it T.J. Smith or is it Daniel Green? Do I say Daniel Green because he needs to be the guy to step forward and become at least Elijah Sullivan level, which is honorable mention, all Big 12 level? Does he have to be that guy that takes the step forward to become that sort of a player? I back off just because I've heard enough times from the coaches that they seem to be more worried about the secondary than linebacker. Reading between the lines and just reading, in some cases, directly what they've said, it sounds like they are more concerned with the secondary than they are linebacker. I give you as evidence Joe Klanderman.
Honestly, if I had to say right now, I'd say our linebacker room is probably our deepest room. You know, we've had some guys that have really come on there. Obviously, Deuce Green and Cody Fletcher are guys that have played a number of snaps for us. But, you know, we made the move in the middle of last season to put Ryan Hennington at linebacker, and he's had a tremendous spring. We moved Wayne Jones to a spot where I think he's a little bit more comfortable. Austin Moore is a kid that's come on. Nick Allen's a kid that's been in the program that's come on. Keenan Gaskin. I mean, I can name a lot of guys. We've got a lot of good competition in that room. So I feel very comfortable with the athleticism that we have in that group, the toughness that we have in that group. I think that's a group where we're going to be we're going to have some depth.
Could be coach speak, could be trying to project confidence, but it seemed like a pretty confident answer to me. I'm going to take him at least somewhat at his word for that. I don't feel as good as that answer seemed to be about where linebacker's at, but I feel worse about the secondary and in particular nickel. Because I don't need Wayne Jones or Ryan Hennington playing nickel. No offense to those guys. I think they can absolutely help and contribute at linebacker, and I'm very excited for Wayne Jones in particular, linebacker, but that's not what you want at nickel.
Well, before he said that, I've actually been thinking about changing my answer to Wayne Jones because he is making the move to linebacker. It might have actually been from the same press conference where Joe Klainerman not only did mention Wayne Jones in that linebacker room, but he singled out Wayne when it comes to getting the defense ready to go pre-snap. That's a big responsibility of a linebacker to be kind of the quarterback of that defense, depending on, you know, which one is taking the reins on that. And he's getting that defensive line ready to go. He's surveying what the offense has, what they're showing, and he's shouting out instructions. I mean, that is pretty big. That's a big spot for somebody that hasn't played linebacker to move into that spot and take over that control. I think that's a big deal. I mean, that can be pivotal in some aspects. I like what they've been saying about Wayne Jones, so I think that's something to keep attention on.
Well, folks, you heard it here first. T.J. Smith and then six guys that Mitch rattled off are the most important for K-State's defense.
You know,
next year.
If Klieman didn't have to rotate in, you know, 73 guys to play defense, I think I'd have a concrete, for sure answer for you. But then a new name pops in my head. I'm like, well, okay, there's an argument for this guy. There's an argument for that guy. Do you want to do the rest of the hour? I could keep rattling off names for you.
Maybe just mix in a name or two as we go to a completely different discussion coming up next. You know, just drop in some Felix Anudike analysis for me at a moment's notice.
Haven't even touched the D-line yet.
Nope, we didn't. We didn't at all. The defensive line got zero love. We'll get to play what I would tell you is one of the all-time great bits of K-State-related audio coming up next. Dean Wade out here doing some work last night for the Cleveland Cavaliers. 21 points, 8 of 12 from the floor, 5 of 8 from three-point range. Dean's been in double figures three straight games. Playing pretty well for the Cavs. Now, the Cavs are not very good at all. They're 7.5 back of the 8th playoff spot in the East. So it's not a good team, but Dean Wade is getting an opportunity to play, and he is, it sounds like, taking advantage of those opportunities. There are a lot of things that are very fascinating about this for me. Let's go ahead and get a taste of what it sounded like last night for Dean first.
They join Wade, Dellavedova, and Okoro. Wade's open off a Delly feed. Sent to New Orleans at the deadline is Dean Wade with a mid-range jumper. Wade is 3 for 4. He has 8 quick points. 60 seconds to go in the second quarter. Wade pulls the trigger and knocks it down. Dean Wade is 4 of 5 from distance.
There's always a part of it that it still gets me when I watch Dean performing in the NBA, looking as confident as ever. Like, man, I mean, any of that fear that was there about shooting an open jumper when he was here at K-State, totally gone. Those talking points in those days are very much gone. It's so damn fun to watch. Like, I get a lot of enjoyment out of watching Dean Wade playing at his peak, just like he did at K-State. Just feels like we didn't get as much of that as we really wanted. Even though he's like a two-time All-Big 12 player, like, it just feels like we didn't get as much of that as you would want. So there's always that part that's like, God, what if he would have been healthy for one of those two tournament runs? Either way, it didn't happen. My question about this now is Dean starting to put together some double-figure scoring games. He had a 20-point game last night. He has a contract now. It is a team option for next year, but, I mean, the way things are going right now, it seems like it would be pretty likely that that is going to happen. Does Dean have a legitimate chance to catch up to being the most well-known K-State pro out there? I think the question you have to ask is, like, what does this look like 2 or 3 years from now? Is Wade going to be the most well-known professional Cats, pro Cat that's out there? Your other two options right now being Wesley Iwundu and Rodney Magruder. Unless you think that somebody, you know, if like 5'7" Marquise Noel is going to turn himself into an NBA player this year, it doesn't seem like anybody is particularly likely at this point to join that group. The problem here for Dean is going to be, I will say this, Mitch, I think by like K-State fan standards, he has a very good opportunity to 2 years from now be like by far the most popular former Wildcat among K-State fans. And that's a phenomenon we've talked about a lot before. The biggest part is, I mean, he's a Kansas kid. He's the hometown hero. He's a Kansas kid. Everybody loves that story. Small town, you know, played in Madison Square Garden, Little Apple to Big Apple, all that. He's also somebody that didn't have to take a break between leaving. Like, Rodney Magruder went out of our consciousness for a couple of years before he came back. Dean just went straight there, basically. I mean, he was playing for the Canton Charge for a while, but, you know, more or less, just went straight on that path, more linear path. I don't think, though, in 2 or 3 years we'll be saying that Dean Wade is the most well-known on a national level. I think that Rodney Magruder, to me, has that locked up. I think Rodney has that locked up for a while. I think it would take Dean Wade becoming either a role player on a good team, a good and high-profile team, or Dean Wade becoming somebody that scores like 15 to 20 a night, even if it's going to be on a mediocre to bad team, for him to have anywhere near the name recognition that Rodney Magruder has across the league. And that's a lot of it is just like, it's not about who they are as a player. It's just about the fortune that Magruder has had with what his opportunities have been. Playing with the Miami Heat, who, yes, not as high profile as when LeBron was there, but still, Eric Spoelstra, a lot of people consider to be maybe the best coach in the league. That's still a market that had some residual heat to it, some residual value to it because of what LeBron did there. And this may be my bias showing, but I mean, the Dan Le Batard Show is the most popular sports radio show / podcast that's out there across the country right now. They originate from Miami. They talk about Magruder every once in a while. Gets a little bit of love from that. He also, oh, by the way, played last year with the Clippers and Kawhi. So, like, he's just been in more high-profile spots than where Dean is at with Cleveland. So that, to me, outweighs basically everything. And while I think Dean has a chance to be the guy that's the most beloved within K-State circles, Rodney is the guy that if you walked up to just random NBA fan in Phoenix, better chance that they know Rodney Magruder in 2 years than they know Dean Wade. That'd be my guess.
I disagree. I think Rodney Magruder, he had his, I wouldn't say 15 minutes of fame with, who'd he get called out by because of their little scrum?
Well, I'm glad you brought it up, and that's a massive part. It's a massive part of my argument here. It was Draymond Green,
thank you,
of the Golden State Warriors.
Apparently he was taking up for Wayne Ellington. When the f*** Rodney Magruder become the tough guy of the team? Like, I don't know, man. Everybody in the league tough these days. It's crazy. I've seen a lot of tough guys this year. I don't understand it. And don't nobody do anything. Like, if you really wanted to do something, you could have done it. Walk over there talking like he's a team tough guy. Get the hell out of here. Tough guy, Rodney. Tough guy.
God, it still churns my stomach when he says Rodney.
It's funny, though. I mean, it's funny. I
feel like he's attacking the family.
Okay, but also, no publicity is bad publicity. And that actually ties in here because that's why, I mean, that was talked about everywhere. Like, that got a lot of run. So if you told a random NBA fan in Phoenix, here are two names, Dean Wade, Rodney Magruder, they're going to be like, oh, Rodney Magruder, that was the guy, Rodney, right? That was the guy that Draymond made fun of. And then if they're like more of a like legitimate, hardcore NBA fan, they would probably be aware of him from his days with the Heat or playing with the Clippers. But like with the Heat there, he made a name for himself as being a big-time defensive stopper and somebody that at one point did score 7.5 points per game in a season. Had a bunch of double-figure scoring games with the Heat. So, like, he's done enough over a period of, like, 4 or 5 years right now to build up some level of name value just as, like, a Jag. He's a Jag. Just a guy in the NBA. But he's been that for a while on some high-profile teams, and that carries some value if you're talking about name recognition.
But the thing is, though, like, I don't see Rodney McGruder as that kind of a national name like you might see him. He had his run with the Heat a couple of years ago where he had his best year where he was starting consistently. But now, even with the Detroit Pistons, who are just a terrible team, Rodney's not starting. He's coming off the bench and not playing a ton of minutes. He has 2 starts this year, and he's averaging 5 points a game. Now, 5.7 to be exact. Dean Wade is averaging 5.5, but I mean, you're taking into consideration what Dean, his role was early in the year, playing just a few minutes here and there. So he's, I mean, that there you got to take in consideration. That was before he was starting games and scoring in double figures. I think Dean right now is actually, because of what you've done for me lately, is a bigger name right now in the NBA. He's getting a lot of traction on social media, getting a lot of attention from the Cavaliers when they tweet out stuff. It's because he's very positive. The only thing Rodney has had attention-wise this year is just being absolutely pummeled by Draymond Green in a post-game press conference where Rodney McGruder, I don't think, ever got a chance to retaliate.
Well, I don't think when you're talking about name recognition, it's so much about what have you done for me lately when it's like hyper lately, like just this year. Is Dean Wade having a better season than Rodney McGruder this year? He is, statistically. Yes, he is. Well, I take that back. I mean, it's fairly close. Rodney's like 5 points a game. Dean Wade's like 5 points a game. Both on bad teams, both on teams that nobody watches in Cleveland and Detroit. But that's kind of my point here. Like, he's built up enough cachet that's going to be on people's brain. Dean Wade is trying to build up cachet, if we're talking about for sake of this argument, by scoring some hollow buckets for a team that's 7.5 games out of the 8th and final playoff spot in the East. Like, just Cleveland does nothing. It does not have any juice to it. Honestly, Mitch, the one thing that he has, actually the thing that I think would be the best argument in favor of Dean in this, would be that Dwayne Wade had that tweet within the last 3 or 4 months. I don't remember specifically when it was. It was this season. But he was like making light of the fact that, like, oh yeah, you know, the best D Wade to ever play for Cleveland when Dean's name popped up on a graphic. Like, that would be the thing. Because, you know, people are frivolous. Like, they don't care about who is who. They don't care about where this dude actually played in school if it's just some random dude in Phoenix. But he may have seen that on social media and been like, oh, okay, Dean Wade, he was like, he's that other D Wade guy. That means more to me than anything he's done actually on the court with the Cavs. Because, like, no, you know, they're a dime a dozen guys that can go out and score 10 to 12 a night on, you know, like in Charlotte or Cleveland or even like San Antonio, as much success as they've had. Just smaller market teams that people aren't watching very often. So I still think Dean has a long way to go. I think it would take him getting traded, or if he just really blossoms into a guy that's going to score 15 to 20 a game eventually at some point in his career for Cleveland, maybe. Would love for that to happen, by the way. Would absolutely love for that to happen.
Well, I will say, I'll give Rodney McGruder some credit. He, before the month of April, I've just been kind of scrolling through his numbers here. He's had a pretty rough season, like really rough, like not really scoring a whole lot. And now in the month of April, he started to really kind of, I wouldn't say catch fire, but he's playing better. He's scoring in double figures 4 out of 6 games.
Well, if we're being honest, like, he's on the back end of his NBA career. I don't think Rodney is too much longer for the NBA, but he's had a nice run of like 5 years being a guy that had to start and grind his way into the league. And at his peak, he scored 7.5 per game, shot like 42% from 3, and was a really good defender for the Heat. Like, teams that I think made the playoffs, you know, would have been like lower seeded playoff teams. It's a good career. Made a ton of money. He's done really well for himself. I guess what I'm saying is I don't see the upside for Dean Wade as being tremendously higher than that. I do think it's higher because I think he can score more. And again, if we're talking about name value, you know, being able to score, it's going to do more for you than just being a 3-and-D guy where your main trade is like you can go out and defend. But I don't think it's like tremendously higher than that. And that's my point. Rodney's done it, and he did it on some teams that were more high profile than where Dean's career has started here in Cleveland. But it's an interesting discussion, and I would love to be totally wrong, and Dean winds up having an awesome NBA career and does turn into a household name. Mitch has the number one song of the day for us coming up next.
I don't think I could hide what I'm feeling inside.
Lord.
Another day, knowing I love you.
I don't know what this is. I don't think I approve of it. This is like soft rock. Would you consider this soft rock?
This is actually considered, no. This is a power ballad.
Power ballad. Okay. Just doing a little Googling here. Is this Boston?
Yes.
Boston's not soft rock?
No.
What do you consider Boston?
I'm gonna take you by surprise and make you realize, Amanda.
This is Amanda by Boston.
This is soft rock.
This is not soft rock. This is a ballad.
What is
Do you consider More Than a Feeling to be soft rock?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
No.
It's pretty soft around the edges. That's pretty soft around the edges.
Boston is an American rock band. You want to take a stab where they're from?
New York.
San Diego. No, I'm just kidding. Boston, Massachusetts, of course. The band has sold more than 75 million records worldwide. Boston ranked the 63rd best hard rock artist by VH1.
Were there never any copyright issues with naming themselves Boston? Like, I mean, you can't... Can you just...
Who's going to come after them?
Can you really do that? I mean, I've always thought the same thing about the band Kansas, too. Like... Can we be a little more imaginative than just stripping your hometown or your home state?
Yes, I could see the court billing right now. The state of Kansas versus Kansas.
That's what I'm saying. Like, how awesome would that be? Supreme Court case, just Kansas v. Kansas. The landmark Kansas v. Kansas case.
Lead singer Brad Delp, who, in my opinion, he has some of the best pipes in rock. Unfortunately, he killed himself in 2007 at the age of 55, so there's only one original member left. That's Tom Scholz. 6 studio albums, 8 top 40 hits. This was their only number one. More Than a Feeling topped out at number 5, which I was really surprised to see. But this is from their third album called Third Stage. It actually took them 8 years. Over 10,000 hours in the recording studio to get this album done, because CBS, who was basically in charge of their recording contract, was upset they weren't busting it out soon enough. So they have been suing him. There was a bunch of lawsuits. It took forever to get over with. And then finally, after it was all done, Boston was able to release their new album.
Do you have information? All I'm interested in, Mitch, in a hard rock power ballad like this that's named after somebody is I need to know the backstory on Amanda.
Well, the thing is, it's not really named after anybody. The song is just basically about telling the girl I love you for the first time. Most guys, it happens within a fit of passion is basically what the song is about. Amanda was just a catchy name. You know, if you think about popular songs that feature a woman's name, you have Rhonda, Layla, Lola, Rosanna, it ends in a. And Amanda was just that next name up.
Now, Rosanna, that's a song. That's a song. None of this Amanda stuff.
Now,
give me some Rosanna.
Is that soft rock? Is that hard rock? Why am I asking you that? And it's kind of a rhetorical question.
Maybe some medium rock?
Medium rock. There's no medium, man. You either go hard or you don't go at all.
Okay.
Back in 1984, 2.5 years before the song was released, small market radio stations got this on before anybody else because somebody at CBS leaked it to them. And Boston didn't even get wind of it until a couple of weeks later. It sent a cease and desist letter out to those radio stations immediately following hearing that news. And they waited another 2.5 years to officially release the song as a single. This was the last number one hit in the United States ever with no music video. The last one. Kept him off MTV when it was launched in 81.
Well, that doesn't seem like a very MTV.
Oh, it was back then. It was back then. Oh, Amanda, it was hot. Amanda was hot back in the mid-80s.
Well, look, I guess there's a reason we're talking about it here is our number one song.
I like this last part here. It's pretty funny because I remember these things. So after Amanda became a big hit, Boston's previous two albums, which were released in the 70s, they became big again when it came to the Hot 200 chart album sales. They were getting a lot of traction again because Amanda really kick-started that. Because, you know, when you go 8 years not releasing an album, or 7 years, however long it was, you kind of reach a new audience when you have a big hit. Like, people go back and listen to your catalog, like, okay, this band is pretty solid. So they sold a lot of albums in the 80s and 90s, but where they also got a lot of traction, John, is you remember these clubs. There used to be like this small brochure that would come into the mail where you could buy a bunch of CDs for a penny.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Boston is one of the top-selling artists of all time when it came to that, I don't even know what to call it.
I don't think by the time it got to me it was a penny, but I definitely remember like a... Yeah, some kind of like subscription service where they'd send you a bunch of CDs.
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't think I ever did anything like that either. I remember getting the brochures in the mail, and it would have like a list of 100 CDs you could pick from. Anything ranging from Boston to Ricky Martin to Kid Rock. Like, everybody you can imagine had something on there.
Columbia House and BMG Music Service offered unbelievable deals on CDs. People joined these clubs for a penny and got a bunch of music for free as long as they promised to buy a certain amount of music at regular club prices.
Okay, so I figured there was some sort of catch. Like, there was something involved in there where they suckered you in with the penny. Like, it's your typical sales sign. They have a penny in big, bold number with the penny sign next to it. But then you got to read the fine print.
Yep.
It says, yeah, you got to, hey, to get this penny first, you got to buy five, and then you get the sixth one for a penny. And that's not how that all worked, but it's kind of like in the same idea where you got to spend some dough to save some dough.
Eight CDs for a penny. That's what it was. Eight CDs for a penny. Penny for your thoughts, Amanda. Ask Us Anything is next. Mitch, what is the most beautiful thing in the world?
The Grand Canyon.
The Grand Canyon. It's the most beautiful thing in the world.
A close second is watching KU lose in anything. Mostly basketball. Give basketball the nod there. It's always a pretty beautiful sight to see.
I would say there is a view that I can still picture in my mind right now at this... So it was not, my grandparents own a cabin in Colorado, or like it's a, you know, kind of like a family owned cabin. And we didn't always stay there, but around there was this other one that was a little bit nicer that we would stay in sometimes on like a family vacation. And if you walk out, there was like a ledge that just overlooked like just a ton of mountains. Just vast. You can see all the way down the mountain. You can see way over to, I don't know if it's like Pikes Peak or what. I don't remember specifics. But it's gorgeous. And if you got there like a sunny morning and you just walked over there, speaking of golf, there was actually a little golf setup where you just hit golf balls down the mountain. Like, and I just remember mornings like crushing golf balls off the side of a mountain, looking into this beautiful, beautiful scenery. I think that's the most beautiful thing that I to date have seen in this world.
Catching all greens on an open road. That's a beautiful sight.
Perhaps also Florence, Italy. Also,
You used to live there, right?
Sunset in Florence. Yes, back in the days when I did live in Florence. Actually, I saw a picture that my cousin texted me a picture of that the other day. Popped up on the old Facebook time hop or whatever.
your family rich or something?
No, not at all.
This cabin in Colorado, going to Florence, Italy.
Not at all. No, the cabin's not. There's no real frills to the cabin at all. Like, that's why we didn't stay there because, you know.
It's a good cabin then.
As a kid, I was like, nah.
Like, is it a cabin literally made of tree logs?
No.
Stacked horizontally?
No. But again, no frills. Not enough for this city boy.
Is there internet? What do you need? What do you need thrill? What do you need all that for?
Oh, you know, like I would like
take in the mountains, man.
I would like running water. That'd be a start.
So you have to go outside, is what you're saying.
Well, here's the other thing, Mitch. The last time I was actually like there, I've been to Colorado a bunch, but I don't ever go to the cabin anymore. Like the last time I was actually at the cabin, that's in our family. I was probably like in high school. So it was when I was back then. I was a high. Imagine me, but just like young. In high school, like I didn't have any time for that.
Oh,
I didn't
God.
Appreciate it at all. Now that I'm older, I wish that I would have appreciated it more. But it was like the place that we went every year, so I did not appreciate it at all. And I was kind of like, yeah, whatever, Colorado. You know, we go do that thing. That's fine.
There was only one time when Mason was here that I just wanted to blurt out, "You are an idiot." On air is when he told that story of when his family went to the Grand Canyon and he had no interest of seeing it, so he just stayed in the hotel room and played video games. I'm like, dude, the freaking Grand Canyon. When I was there,
well, I thought you were gonna say it was when he would talk bleep about Colorado all the time.
Oh,
said that
no,
Colorado was terrible.
I know he doesn't appreciate anything besides he told us one time that, oh, I don't want to go anywhere unless it has a baseball stadium.
I won't travel unless baseball is involved. Bailey's like wanting him to travel.
How is somebody like that married?
Bud. How dare me, Bud. Bud is like wanting him to travel, and he's like, yeah, unless I can go see the Wingnuts play a minor league baseball game, I'm not interested. Come on, dude. Go see Florence. It'll change your life. Go see Paris.